of July the 23rd, 1962, at Fairbanks, Alaska. And this is Igloo 4, Pioneers of Alaska, tape recording of an old-timer, and he'll give his name on the tape, and where he's from, and a little of his history. Where he's from. No, just your name is, and you were born where?
My name is Charles G. Larson, now residing at Carnegie in Washington. I was born in Sweden. I came to the United States 1900 to the state of California, where I worked in the woods for 5 years. In 1905, I left for Alaska. We left Seattle on a steamer by the name of Humboldt to Skagway. We then took the Narrow Gauge Railroad, White Pass, I think they call it, to Whitehorse. The fare on the stage was rather high. We were young. We were 3 hours, and we walked all the way to Dawson over Lake LaBarge. And we arrived in a very good condition. After staying around Dawson a few days, we got a job on Hunker Creek, 49 below Hunker Creek, for Mr. Charles Freeman, and I think his partner was Lou Vitt, I believe. I'm not absolutely sure. In the fall of 1907, I bought Lou's share in the farm plant, I mean in the mining plant, boiler and machinery, and we shipped it down to Fairbanks. This was late in the fall. It was beginning to get cold, and it was snowing sometime. So they tied the boat up every night. We just traveling in the daytime. But we arrived at Fairbanks in good condition. I believe we stayed at the hotel they call the Third Avenue Hotel for a few days.
What year was that?
1907. In the fall of 1907. And we were looking around for a place do some mining. We finally went in partnership with John Butterwitz. He had a lease on 12 below Fairbanks Creek. And that's father to John Butterwitz Jr. We were mining. The following year we bought John out, and Freeman and I worked there for 8 years, mining. There was 2 12s, we mined 11 and half a 12. We mined there for nearly 8 years. That year, Mr. Freeman went downriver to a new strike. Now, I can't remember the name of this. Place. And I was mining that last year on Walnut Creek. I may go back a little. I met my present wife at the Nordell Hotel in the fall of 1911. Her name was Ida. Miss Ida Harlow. She was a sister to Mrs. John Lappy. And I guess it was love at first sight. We were married in 1912 at the Nordell Hotel, the 18th of July. So So you see, this is our 50th anniversary last Wednesday. That's why we came up here. We just had to come up here and see Alaska again, where we had some of the friends and some of the... Which good time. We were blessed with four children. Carl was born in the same house where John Butkiewicz Jr. was born. As we had already bought them out and they moved to Fairbanks. Our second is Hazel Anita. She married a doctor and they live in Montana. And the other son was born 1919. This is Carnation, Washington. He's been in the Air Force for 22 years. He's now a full colonel in the Air Force and is down at the present time at Hamilton Field. He has five children. And our youngest daughter is Jane, now Mrs. Harry Doherty, living in Seattle. We have 10 grandchildren. We left Fairbanks in the fall of 1914 and bought a dairy farm at Carnation, Washington. It's near the Carnation Milk Farms out there in the beautiful Snoqualmie Valley. But we felt that during at our golden wedding anniversary, we just had to come back to Fairbanks and see if any of our old friends were still living. We have met a good many of them, and we have enjoyed it immensely. People here in Fairbanks has been very, very nice to us. They have done everything that they possibly could to make it pleasant for us. And we only wish that we could stay a little longer, but we have to leave tonight at 12 o'clock on the Alaska Airlines. I may say that the Alaska Airlines, when we took off from the Tacuba Seattle Airport, presented my wife with a beautiful corsage and called us up to the entrance to the plane before it left and took a picture of us and presented us with a beautiful cake. And arriving here at Fairbanks, their representative took us into Nardale Hotel here. In fact, they had arranged for our room here and our reservation here. And the pioneers of Yukon pioneers, what is the problem?
This is the pioneers of Alaska and the Yukon Order of Pioneers.
Pioneers of Alaska, the Yukon pioneers, has really gone out to do everything they possibly could for us. We enjoyed seeing we didn't know when we left home that you had the celebration here. And we just happened to land in Fairbanks the day that your celebration started.
Pedro Discovery Day.
Yeah, Pedro
Discovery
the
Day.
Golden Days. And we enjoyed every bit of it. We attended the mug-up evening, probably, and the flower show, and watched the parade. And all the doing, we took it all in, and it was really something to watch. Those things didn't have while we were here, but I think it's really nice to revive the old days like it was when we were here. We visited Petro Creek, Petro, the monument out there, and we drove all over Fairbanks Creek.
Did you go to the university?
Yes. We were looking for the place for our camp was, or mesos and cabins. And we had an awful time to find it. We were rather disappointed at the way the Fairbanks Creek looked, because it really was a beautiful creek. It was nothing but tealing. But we did finally locate Deep Creek and Bear Creek. So we really know where our cabins used to be. And we drove up, back up, and came to Walnut Creek. I recognized it there. Then we went up to, we found Discovery, where the old store used to be at Discovery. We went into the brush there, and we even found the old safe that Dan Egan had, and McLean before him. And it sure was nice to see the whole thing. Then we drove up to Kreitz and Feldman stamp mill. And we went through the whole thing there. And 50 years ago, about, probably a little more, I visited the same plant. And when it was in operation, when Kreitz still lived and Feldman. And I saw it again, this time, about 50 or some years later. And then we drove on to Fish Creek and saw the operation there of Mr. Olson, the drag line. Oh yes, we also saw Martin Sater's drag line down on Pepper Street, but we were able to find Martin, although he was there. We saw his pickup looking all over for him, but we wasn't able to find him. And then back, we drove home, back to Seattle. We spent the whole day, and we found it was, yes, to Fairbanks. And it was a very hot day. It was 87 in the shade out there, and believe me, it was hot, but we had some very cool water out there in the creek. And we want to thank all you people for your generosity and your kindness to us. It has been a great pleasure, and we will never forget it. And I hope that in a couple of years we can fly up again. Although, you see, I'm 80, will be 81 years old, so my wife is quite a bit younger. And I guess you look at two. But it's been a pleasure, and I thank you all. Goodbye.
Mr. Olson, I want your wife to say a few words for the auxiliary and the finer women. Mm-hmm. You well, give your full name.
All right. Because I've had a sit down with you. All right. All right. My name is Mrs. Charles Larson, and over at the mock-up, what you call it. I had a picture taken with Governor Egan's wife and some other ladies and the president in beautiful corsets. I don't know if I ever forget these things. And then, let's see, what I was supposed to take? I have pictures, I think we have pictures taken 9 different times. I don't know how good they are. The one I saw, it wasn't very good to me, but I guess it has to be. It's just really been a pleasure to be here. It was quite warm Friday, but a bit disappointed when it rained. I never thought it would be raining in Fairbanks, but that's the way it's, I guess it is. We can't, none of us help that. It was a nice parade on Saturday afternoon, and I saw the children's parade, and I went to the flower show twice, and oh, I never even dreamed that there would be so many beautiful flowers. It's just been very, very, really pleasure to be in here, and even the girls in the restaurant, they just say, well, welcome back. We went out there to eat this morning, and Well, we didn't. How long are you going to stay? Oh, we're leaving tonight. Well, they didn't think we were here long enough. They're very nice and want to wait on you and talk to you and ask you where we first were from and then where we've been while we're going back. Thank you all.
Thank you, Mrs. Olson. Mm-hmm. Now, this portion of the tape is for the auxiliary women and the pioneer women. There's very few pioneer women left now. There's only about 18 or 19 altogether alive. This is Harry Hughes recording for Igloo 4 on this tape, and we hope to put this away in our archives of your little historical visit here to Fairbanks. This is July the 25th, 1962 at Fairbanks, Alaska, and this is Harry Hughes recording for Igloo 4, and Mr. Irving McKay Reed has brought an early day gnome pioneer over for a visit, and Mr. Reed will go ahead and proceed to take his tape. Talk right up.
This is Mr.
Good and loud.
Will you give your name,
Well, it's William Harrison Lorpow. That's spelled L-O-E-R. P is in Paul. A, Z as in boy, E, L, Lorpow. And my permanent address is 307 North Longfellow Avenue, Tucson, Arizona.
When did you come to Nome, Harrison?
I came to Nome as a young boy with my father and mother on the steamship Centennial in 1900, in the spring of 1900.
When your father was, what did your father do in Nome? When...
My father was a gold miner. He had been a gold miner most of his life. He had been a pioneer of the Black Hills, South Dakota, and had come to Dawson in 1898. And in 99, had come to Nome from Dawson and then out to Seattle. And in the spring of 1900, he brought my mother and me to Nome.
Well, can you tell us where you were mining and describe some of the mining activities there?
My father's first mining activities was on the beach about 3 miles west of Nome. At that time, the Nome Beach was very active with all kinds of mining machinery, and he worked on the beach for 2 years. We lived in a small cabin built from drift logs about 3 miles west of Nome for 2 years.
Can you tell us what Nome looked like in those days?
Of course, I was a very young boy at that time, and my recollection is a little spotty, but I remember when we landed at Nome, my father went on ahead to this cabin up the beach to make sure we had a place to stay, and my mother and I followed, and I remember finding our way among the tents. The tents were then so closely pitched that we had to find a way among the tent ropes. Whether there were any streets or not, any formal streets, I don't remember, but I do remember these tents very close together. And I remember the sand spit, what we called then the sand spit, that was covered also with tents and I think some buildings. And I first went to school, to a small school on the sand spit at Nome.
My memory, first memory of the sight of Nome was a long white line stretching from almost to Cape Rodney from Cape Nome. And all tents. But it just looked like a white line on the horizon when we came in on the boat. Well, when did you go out to the creeks then after that, to Harrison?
Well, I think it was my father went out first to Iron Creek, where he mined for many years, and I think that must have been about 1903. And a year or so later, my mother and I also accompanied him to Iron Creek. We worked a claim on, I believe, what was called Dome Creek, but which is really a part of Iron Creek. And we returned there for a number of years. He finally left there about 1918. I myself left to go to school on the outside in 1911 and returned for one summer in 1914, which was my last experience in Alaska for a good many years.
Tell me, how did you get to Iron Creek from Nome in those days?
Well, there was no good transportation. Our first trip to Iron Creek was overland. We had to walk. I remember it took us 3 days to make, I think it was about 50 miles. And even in later years, we frequently had to walk. Even after the railroad was constructed from Nome to, I believe it was, Lane's Landing. The railroad was not in operation. Every year in the early spring, the bridges or trestles would be destroyed by this spring ice when the rivers broke up. And also where snow or ice covered the track, some time was required for that to be cleared away or to melt away, so the railroad was not serviceable, and we had to walk. That is, the railroad was not serviceable until later in the year, even during those years when the railroad was operating.
Then you didn't leave at Iron Creek all year, then you...
Yes, we would stay, we'd go out in the early spring when placer operations could begin, and we would work under there until the freeze-up in the fall, and then we would return to Nome, live in Nome during the winter, where I went to school. First to grade school, and then finally graduated from high school. Mr. Irving Reed, who is talking with me now, went to school at the same time, part of the same time.
You remember Jimmy Doolittle while you were in school there?
Oh, yes. Jimmy Doolittle and his father and mother had the house next door to us, Nome. And of course, I remember Jimmy and his family very well. I think that Jimmy and his family left Nome while he was still a comparatively young boy. I think somewhere around 1906, although I might be slightly in error about that.
Well, did you go to school in the on the Sandspit all that time, or did you go to the main school?
No, I went to school on the Sandspit, I believe, only 1 year, and then moved over into Nome, and later into the, I think it was a three-story building that served as the Nome School for many years, Nome Grade School and High School.
Well, I can't. When you walked, there was no horse transportation out there in those days, or dog team out to Iron Creek, or did you have to walk every year?
Well, I think every year we had some walking to do. Even when the railroad was functioning, the distance from the railroad was about 5 miles over the hill from what we called the Pilgrim River Valley, mm-hmm. over into Iron Creek, something like 5 miles. And there was some horse transportation, but horses were not used a great deal. Use a horse meant providing feed for him, and there was the problem of transporting feed overland. Some horses were used on Iron Creek, but rather spasmodically. They were not used from year to year. I think one year my mother and I did come in with a buckboard and a team of horses, but ordinarily we couldn't get back and forth without some walking.
Did you go by way of El Dorado Creek or river, or did you go by Nome River to get into Iron Creek?
The shortest route was directly across from Nome to the mouth of Dexter Creek, where there was a roadhouse, I think. They called it Chase's Roadhouse. And then we went up, I believe it was Buster Creek, and over a mountain, and then down again into some lower country, on to the Flambeau River. And from the Flambeau, I've forgotten the name of the creek, but we crossed over to the El Dorado. From the El Dorado, we went up Venetia Creek, and from Venetia, we got to a tributary of Iron Creek called Canyon Creek, and went down that to Iron Creek. And there was a horse and a wagon trail and foot trail along this route that I described, which made traveling on foot very much easier than just over unbroken country.
Well, what kind of mining did your father do, Harrison, there?
Now, this was all placer mining by methods which today would be called quite primitive. The depth of gravel on Iron Creek at the park where we mined was somewhere around 6 to 8 feet. And he followed the method generally in use at that time of building a covered drain. This drain would run nearly horizontally with a very slight gradient, and it would be covered over with a rock rubble construction, where large flat rocks would be laid on the two rock walls to provide an interior drain of maybe a foot wide by possibly a foot high. And the sides of this drain would be chinked with moss and covered over with gravel, so that during storms, when the whole bed of the creek would be covered with water, this drain would be preserved by plugging the upper end of the grain that would survive the storm and could be dug out again and mining could proceed. And we, I think, each year ran a new drain, although there may have been years when the same drain served more than 1 year. And during the later years on Iron Creek, we mined a bench where, of course, no bedrock drain was necessary. There was water brought in a ditch
short elevation above the bench, and the bench overburden, which in this case was maybe 15 feet deep, was sluiced off, and then the concentrated material near bedrock was shoveled into sluice boxes and worked in that way.
Well, it was all handwork then in every case?
Almost all handwork. We had no power equipment and had no assistance, mechanical assistance, other than by hydraulic methods during the operation of this bench. We did move quite a little material in that case with hydraulic nozzles and by ground sluicing.
Well, when you were mining in the creek bottom, did you use all hand methods there, or was there some hydraulic work there too?
In the creek bottom, it was all hand methods. The ground was shoveled back, that is, the barren overburden was shoveled back by hand, and then the lower hay material near bedrock was shoveled into the sluice boxes. But that was all by hand. In fact, I think that was the general practice all along the creek, except at one place, I believe that this was called, it was operated by A.H. Moore, near the mouth of Discovery Creek, where some more extensive hydraulic operations were used, and there was some scraper work done with horses. Not continuously, however, from year to year, there were difficulties. Matter of getting feed for horses, 50 miles out from Nome, and the ground was not deep enough, as I remember it, to warrant the hydraulic methods.
Tell me, did you have to hire several men to...
Yes, that varied. My father, each year, he had several men, or there were occasions when he worked alone.
I think that's awfully interesting. Do you have any questions, Harry?
About the what he saw when he landed there, get the dates, if possible. When you landed in Nome, where he was born first, where he was born, some history of it.
Oh, can you tell where you were?
Yes, I was born in Terryville, South Dakota. And that is very close to Lead, South Dakota, and very close to Deadwood. My father, as I said earlier, was a pioneer of South Dakota, was a member of the Black Hills Pioneers. and he was employed for many years at the Homestake Mine before he began traveling. He went first to Central America. He operated a small mine in Nicaragua before he went to the Klondike. And I was born in South Dakota, October 4th, 1892.
And then what year did you come to know him now? Did you get to meet him?
In the spring of 1900, I came to know
him. Spring of 1900?
Yes.
And the way of life at Nome was kind of rough. Can you describe some of the things that you can remember from when you first landed there?
Yes, the way of life was primitive, all right. Well, we did many things that I'm sure are not done today. We used fuel. We used the driftwood that had come ashore, and that was very plentiful along the Nome Beach at that time. Even after we moved to Nome from the beach, we hauled in those logs, and I remember sawing up quite a few of those logs. There was coal available, but the general custom of the country was to use what there was there. And on the creeks, we used willows. Chopping willows and hauling those into the camp, carrying them in the summer, that was part of the job. And I think a good deal of the hardships really fell on the women that accompanied their husbands to the north. They deserve a great deal of credit indeed for enduring these hardships and cooking on little sheet iron stoves, and they had none of the facilities that we have today.
Well, didn't they salvage some of the driftwood to build their shelters?
The cabin that we had, that we lived in, from 1900, in fact, it had been built by some friends of my father's the preceding year in 1899. That was built from drift logs that had come ashore and that were very plentiful in the early days. No, that's right.
Will you describe how they burned willows in these stoves? I know how it's done, but I don't know.
Well, the willows were green. They hadn't had a chance to dry out, but used in proper sizes, they did burn. Mixing the small willows with the large ones and getting a bed of coals, they burned, and the smell of willows burning was really quite an attractive thing that people of that time remember pleasantly.
Well, in Nome now, they had no indoor plumbing at all. And
no indoor plumbing.
And you bought all your water from the waterman.
Yes, we bought the water from the waterman, or it was my job with a couple of dogs to go to, I think we got most of our water at Dry Creek. And there was a water hole back there, and had a barrel that we put on a small sled, and it was my job as a young boy to go back and fill this barrel and haul it in over the snow. That was the water. Very good water, as a matter of fact. It's very good water. I should mention mention another thing in connection with some of the hardships, particularly out on the creeks with the mosquitoes. Mosquitoes were very bad at a certain season of the year, I think in the early part of the year. And we had no chemicals such as we have now, no flit, and we couldn't sleep at night properly. I mean, we just had a tent, or several tents, as a matter of fact, and we would build a smudge in the evening of moss and smoke the tent out, or smoke ourselves out for half an hour or so, and finally we would, after the mosquitoes had all been smoked out, we would close the tent and get inside. And we would have to use, in addition to that, mosquito bars that we hung over the beds. And mosquitoes were a continuing pest for a number of weeks in the early part of the year.
How about food and gardens?
We had practically no gardens. We had several small boxes in which we would plant radishes, boxes with soil and with glass windows placed over them. And in those we would grow a little lettuce or some radishes, but negligible. The amount of things that we grew in Nome or on Iron Creek was negligible.
How about fish and game meat?
There was a great deal of fish, not very much game. The fish, I think, one of the best fishing areas in the world is the Pilgrim River, which drains Salmon Lake. And that was within about 5 miles of our camp on Iron Creek. I think the maps show that as the Cruzamapa River, but we called it the Pilgrim River. It's a beautifully clear stream and full of grayling and Dolly Varden trout. And these, both the Dolly Varden and also the grayling came up Iron Creek also. A great deal of fish. The only trouble is we were so busy. We worked 10 hours a day, 7 days a week. It was a 70 hour per week undertaking during all the summer season.
No, very short season.
No 40 hour a week such as they have today.
Tell me, did you get any reindeer meat there?
Yes, we got reindeer meat in Nome. A considerable amount of reindeer meat. We didn't get reindeer out on the creeks. It might have been available in some places, but we didn't get any.
You had to import all your meat then?
Yes. Yes. All the meat, bacon, ham, canned meat. We had fresh eggs in the spring.
How much a dozen?
I've forgotten the price, but we did, when the boats came in the spring, the fresh eggs were one of the attractions.
Those were getting kind of stale.
Did you spend the winter there, too?
Oh, yes, yes.
What did your father do in the winter there?
Well, we did some work in the winter. That is, I went to school, but he did some work. He freighted supplies for the next year off to Iron Creek. We had a team of dogs like everyone else in those days. And he got ready for the next year's work. And then we cut wood. My father always worked for himself. He never worked except on cleanups where he represented some buddy in cleaning up. He was quite an experienced miner, both in placer and in so-called quartz or hard rock mining.
Can we take a little intermission? I'll change the tape.
Yes, sir. Well,
I think it's...
Well, if you're going to terminate it, I've got, let's see, I've got enough to terminate it on.
Don't you? What do you think, Irving?
I think that working for yourself is a bad habit of most nomads. I never could work for anybody else but myself. It's been some kind of a handicap all my life.
Mr. Harrison, I'm glad to have the opportunity.
Lorpovel is the last name. Harrison Lorpovel. I was known as a youngster as Harrison Lorpovel. Also, I'm known...
What nationality are you?
Bill Lorpovel. The name is German.
German?
Mm-hmm. Yes. My grandfather came... Lorpovel came to Wisconsin from Germany in about 1840.
Now, we have a German boy here from Germany. He's been here about 27 years now. He's getting the history written in German from Germany and bringing it back here to Alaska and transcribing some of the books. That's Henry Bender. You know him, don't you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's made a trip this year back to Germany.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of history about Alaska in other languages and other printings in other parts of the world.
Yes, I'm
from
sure
the early days.
That would be true, no doubt.
Well, this is Harry Hughes recording for Igloo 4 on July the 25th, 1962 at Fairbanks, Alaska.